As Billy and I were putting the bulletin together this week, I realized what profound trouble I might be getting into, especially with Don being the elder assisting, to have a sermon title that is Bigger Barns or Better Barns. I'm sorry, Kathy, I'm not getting into that debate. And thankfully, Lisa is not here. But it was a fun moment for us. I would note that Barnes is with an E. This Barnes, yes. So this is not about you. There's a wonderful old folk tale. There are many variations of it, but there's one from England that goes about a poor woodcutter who went out to cut some wood in the forest so he could make enough money to feed himself and his wife for the day. And the woodcutter found a tree that he felt would bring an adequate price. But as he was raising his axe, there was a forest fairy that stopped him. See, the tree was much older than he, and so he was asked to spare its life. Now, the man countered that without the money that this tree would bring him, he and his wife would likely starve. So the forest fairy said, "Then, if you spare the tree, I will give you three wishes." Three wishes, he thought, dreaming of the wealth that he could acquire with those three wishes. And so the man agreed, and he promised never to cut down the old trees in the forest, and his three wishes were then granted. But the poor woodcutter ran home to tell his wife. He was screaming they were now rich. His wife, as you might guess, was a bit skeptical of his story, but the woodcutter explained about the forest fairy and how he promised never to cut down the old trees, and he was granted the three wishes. So then the woodcutter and his wife began to argue about what to wish for. And he said, a new house. And she said, no, a palace. A bag of gold, then, to pay the servants we're going to need. Why wish for only a bag when we could have a wagon full of gold? And on through the whole evening, they argued about these three wishes. And finally, when they were getting really worn out and hungry from arguing, they stopped and the woodcutter said, "I'm so hungry, I wish we had some sausage." Well, you know what happened. The wife then began to tear into him because he had so foolishly wasted one of their three wishes on sausages. Finally, he was just so exasperated, he said, "Oh, I wish those sausages were attached to your nose." And so they were. Sobbing, the wife sat on the floor, and her husband said, "I suppose there's only one thing to wish for now." And so he wished that the sausages were off his wife's nose. And they then sat down for dinner, and a fine dinner it was. Nice whole story. It may sound like it's something that belongs to the Lord of the Rings trilogy or movies, you know, the wood spirits and the like. But the message is one that, if we look at the heart of it, resonates. We do so easily lose perspective when there is money involved, or when wealth is called into question, or possessions become a big burden for us, as we're finding out, or status is at stake, all of those things. Perhaps that's why it can be noted that preachers often shy away, or they approach with hesitation, preaching about financial things. Which is quite ironic from a gospel standpoint because Jesus, on the other hand, seemed to have no reluctance at all to talk about possessions and wealth and the use of what we possess. Fully 1/6 of all of the sayings of Jesus have something to do with money or possessions or greed or not sharing with those who are hurting and so on and so on. And the prophets of Israel were very much along the same lines, weren't they? Now, was Jesus anti-success? Did Jesus have a problem with people becoming well paid for their efforts? Are we to assume that being poor in the spirit, as the Sermon on the Mount says, is equivalent to being poverty-stricken? I'm not going to answer that yet. But I do think that Jesus would be intrigued if he looked at things today, as he undoubtedly does. What happens when 9 persons in an office pool win a huge lottery, and the 10th person who always buys a ticket with them wasn't there that day? Okay? He would have shaken his head at all the lawsuits that then ensue about the pattern that wasn't followed, or the friendships and the cookouts that now become enclaves of separation, and how people who would have been thrilled to find a $20 bill on the sidewalk are now terrified to hoard away hundreds of thousands of dollars that just came out of nowhere. And then all of the friends and relatives that suddenly decide they want to be close to you. Yeah, Jesus would have shaken his head. And it doesn't have to be that way, though. It truly doesn't. There's a Mennonite pastor, a friend of mine, who I once was visiting with in Pennsylvania. And when I was visiting, he took me to a hardware store in the town of Souderton. You see, he wanted me to meet the owner of the hardware store, and I said, okay, and we met him, and he was a nice guy, and we talked about tools and the weather and fishing, and then we said goodbye. And then Richard and I went to a Mennonite diner for lunch. If you've ever had lunch at a Mennonite diner, you know that lunch is lunch. So over this monstrous lunch, Richard asked me if I could tell what was so special about this hardware store owner. I said, well, he was a Lutheran, and seemed like a hard-working Pennsylvania Lutheran, and a nice guy. And Richard said, well, he is all of that. And he also won the Pennsylvania lottery. Twice. $6 million the first time, and then only $3 million the second time. And I said, whoa, why is he still working at a hardware store? I asked. What did he do with all that money? And Richard said, well, he did buy a slightly larger cabin at the lake. Slightly. And he bought a slightly newer motorboat for the lake. And the rest he put into trusts for his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren that they couldn't touch until he built an entire wing onto his church, and the rest he gave away to ongoing charities, except for the 2-seat Mercedes coupe that he bought for his pastor. I just added that. Now, the pastor was happy with the wing on the church. And what Richard said to me, Richard, this Mennonite pastor, said, you know, that guy is richer than you or I can ever imagine to be in dollars, but even more, he has always been richer than us. He has always been richer in contentment, in faith, in love of others, in satisfaction of honest labor, with the respect of his loved ones and community. He has always been rich. In short, you know, it's lots of dollars did not alter this man. And I guess that's the most amazing part of the story. It magnified his opportunities to live out his faith. I sometimes wonder if many people in our times and society are truly contented, deeply at peace in their lives. You know, we sometimes think that in order to be at peace, you have to have a radical change in who you are, what you do, and how you live in order to be contented. Almost like becoming a monk, a contemplative. And we're not willing to make those changes, and we don't. And so we wait for peace as if peace is something elusive that's way out there in the future. But what if we don't have to change everything to be at peace or to be faithful? Just to be authentic within the context of who who we are and where we live. You know, most of us in America, I would say that we live in global denial, thinking that we struggle to make ends meet when actually, for most of us, we're just stressed from having to prioritize our stuff. So what if we did make a small yet definitive act of simplifying and ministering with things that we control and possess? Just a small initial act. And then just see how that makes you feel. You feel more at peace. Might it lead to another such small step? And then another. You see, the change that God wants and wills for us all, for all of us, is whatever walk of life, in whatever income bracket, in whatever daily situation we find ourselves, God wills for us simply a change of spiritual clothing. What the Apostle Paul was saying, as Don read to us so well. If we are truly to be at peace, we have to hear, we have to receive the blessing of God that gives us that peace. And there can be some barriers to receiving that blessing, that clothing, that peace that's so available. One of the barriers sometimes is unhealthy behaviors that are preventing us from putting on the clothing of God. We may need to make a change, large or small, to those behaviors. Sometimes it's a lifestyle that puts status and stressful expectations and work over the real clothing that will give us peace. We may need to make a change, large or small. Sometimes it is the possessions and the anxious, fearful hoarding of wealth, as if there will ever be enough to give us peace. So the hardest part is often to accept the blessing that God offers that allows us to simply embrace the child of God that God has created us to be and has always given us the ability to be. Many of us may have read from the writings of the wonderful priest and contemplative Henry Nouwen. Toward the end of Henry Nouwen's life, his foremost prayer had become primarily a prayer of listening for the blessing, as he puts it, listening for the blessing. He said the real work of prayer is to become silent and listen to the voice that says good things about me. Now, he acknowledged that sounds rather self-indulgent. But he said it, for him, means seeing himself through God's eyes as the beloved. Seeing through God's eyes that I can be a temple in which God chooses to dwell. And he says the more that he listened to that voice saying the good things about him, then the less likely he was to judge his worth by how others responded to him or how much he achieved in their eyes. He says he prayed for that inner peace to express itself in daily life in such things, simple things as eating and drinking, often in the LARC community with challenged adults where he lived. Just in talking, in loving others, in playing, and in working. He sought such true freedom in an identity that was anchored in a place that he says was beyond all human praise and blame. But friends, all I'm trying to convey this morning is that blessings is not stuff. Blessing can be found in what we do with our stuff that brings a smile to God and brings a deep joy of contentment to our hearts. And so as the Presbyterian Church at Shrewsbury moves now forward into the future that God intends for this congregation, this congregation will be called upon, first of all, to use Jesus' language in the gospel, to build better barns. Not bigger barns, but better barns, out of which can then flow compassion and caring ministry and spiritual growth and outreach to the hurting and embrace to the lonely, nurture of faithful living, development of excited disciples, and vibrant, powerful worship of God. Because with a right focus on the better barns, constructed out of love and of faith, the produce of those better barns will nourish the soul, and God willing, will feed the world. Amen.